Welcome back to another episode of Fisher Link, a podcast presented by Fisher Inc. magazine for the Fisher College of Business to highlight stories in and around Ohio State that you may not have heard about. I'm Andrew Shihada, the Vice President of Podcast for Fisher Inc.
And I'm Barrett Fiore. It is our pleasure to have Ms. Alicia Venetis on this episode of Fisher Link. Ms. Venetis completed both a Bachelor's of Applied Science from the University of Chicago, as well as a Master's of Business Administration from the University of Illinois. Currently, she is a Regional Director for Pfizer, specializing in access and reimbursement. Welcome, Ms. Venetis. Starting off, what does your position as Regional Director entail?
Hi, so thank you so much for having me on this podcast. What my position entails is I lead a team of what are called field reimbursement managers, and a very high level of how to explain that role is it's called channel management in the pharmaceutical industry. So I work in a specialized business unit that helps educate physicians and their offices on how to get specialty drugs to their patients based on the different channels that that drug may have to go to in order to reach their patient.
Very nice. So that sounds like a lot of what you do relies heavily on logistics and training. Where does that background come from, and how does that help you in what you do now?
So in pharmaceuticals, there's pretty much, I would say, two channels. One of those channels are retail, which means for all intents and purposes, you go to a physician's office, they write a prescription, you walk down to your local pharmacy and you pick up that prescription. Then there's another class of drugs called specialty drugs or biopharmaceuticals. And that's the area that I in space that I work in, which means that the physician just cannot write a prescription and then you go to a retail pharmacy and pick that prescription up. That physician has to write the prescription, and it typically will go through what is called a specialty pharmacy. And understanding that drug channel is what really is involved in this particular arena.
So within your job, you're interacting with a lot of different clients and a lot of different needs. How do you manage those clients and make sure that you're able to keep up with all of them throughout your job?
So that is an excellent question, and I would say probably one of the most fundamental understandings in this role is you not only have internal stakeholders that you work across, and what I mean by that is we work in collaboration with sales, we work in collaboration with legal and compliance, we work in collaboration with marketing, we work in collaboration with payers, we work in collaboration with specialty pharmacies. And that's just the internal stakeholders. What I mean by that are those that work for, let's say, Pfizer. And then you have the external stakeholders, which are the customers, the patients, the healthcare providers. And so really managing and navigating that is what makes this role so critical. And oftentimes where most of the people in this role have many years of pharmaceutical experience, and or they've maybe worked at a pharmacy or they've worked at a physician's office where they've seen one aspect of the role and have an understanding as to what it entails.
So you mentioned a lot how other people have previous experiences that help them in their role. Can you tell us a little bit more about your job history and your experiences that helped you to get to where you are now?
Yes. And so what I would say is most people have some sort of sales experience. So my role was a little bit more untraditional. I started out as a respiratory therapist. That is the degree that I received from the University of Chicago. And from there, I went to a company that specialized in selling respiratory equipment. So that was my first kind of taste of sales, and I really enjoyed it. And selling pharmaceuticals has always been one of those areas that I knew was hard to get into, but I was able to meet somebody and was able to get an interview with a large pharmaceutical company and start my sales. So I was in sales for about 10 years. I helped build two divisions in to pharmaceutical companies. So that was a little bit of my experience in building an entrepreneurship. And then from there is when biologics just started to make their way into the pharmaceutical industry. And I was able to be in sales and sell a biologic. And that's also where, quote unquote, reimbursement came into. So I took some chances. And with those experiences, I then went to a bunch of startups, which was an invaluable experience. And I worked with what are called one molecule companies. So unlike Pfizer that has many molecules, I worked for companies that just had one molecule. With those companies is a lot of risk because if their molecule is not successful, then the company is not successful, which means I am not successful. So I did that. And then I did have an opportunity because I started up a division that Pfizer contracted out. And I was able to then, they brought that particular division in-house, which is reimbursement. And that's how I was able to kind of work my way back into large pharmaceutical companies, which has, you know, there's so many great areas and different arenas for pharmaceuticals. And some of those are startup companies, which are risky, but also working with Pfizer and this startup division still had that entrepreneurial feel to it.
You said that you helped build teams within two different pharmaceutical companies. What were some of the challenges that you were involved with when building those teams, and how did you work past them?
Great question. And it's one of those things that I currently tell my team as we're building now is everybody wants, I shouldn't say everybody, a lot of people think that they want to be part of a buildup. They want to be part of a startup until they realize the frustration is the buildup in the startup. You know, oftentimes we say in the industry, we're building the plane as we're flying it. And so if you are not, if you're not agile, if you're not able to make and be okay with frustration, then maybe a startup isn't for you. But those are the challenges, is you don't know what you don't know. So in order to better understand and do better, you have to make mistakes. You have to be willing to learn from your mistakes. And oftentimes those mistakes are not done privately. They're done a little bit more publicly. So humility goes a long way as well. And, but it is one of those things where you look back and you kind of have a sense of accomplishment because you can look back, for instance, I can look back at this role and say, I helped build the reimbursement division for Pfizer in their immunology and inflammation division, which is the division that I sit in. And so there is that sense of pride that goes with that frustration as well.
Would you say that the challenges and sometimes shortcomings of working at a startup that may not be successful with what they're doing are some of the building blocks that led to your success in your career now? Or what would you attribute to your current success?
Absolutely. So I have been with, I was with two startups. One startup got bought out by another company. And so they let go of their executive leadership team, which I was part of, and which led me to another startup. And that startup had one molecule and the FDA did not approve that one molecule. So that startup was not able to start up. So I was let go of that. And each one of those afforded me an opportunity that then brought me to the company that I was with prior to Pfizer, which were they were looking for somebody that knew startups, knew the challenges of a startup. And so I took on a role, like I said, that then developed into bringing that division that I was the national business director for one of the divisions that Pfizer brought in-house. And that's how I got the role that I was in, and I could not have gotten that role had I not been into the in the role that I was previously. So each one of those was a building block that not only set me up for success, that is where I am right now, but also afforded me an opportunity that I could not have had had I not been part of a journey where the company got bought out and everybody was let go, and or the drug never made it to market, but seeing how much work and effort was put in order to bring that drug to market really helped me be part of the division that I am in right now with Pfizer, where we do have products in the pipeline that will be coming hopefully to launch.
And so it seems like you've learned a lot through your journey in your career. And a lot of people could use some advice earlier on, maybe that maybe they didn't think of. So what advice do you have for someone who is not totally sure what they want to do with their career?
Well, that's where I think you guys are in such an awesome opportunity, because one of the things that I think you're able to do early on is take risks. You know, somebody, for instance, at my age with children and a home and mortgage and all of the things that come with life, you may not have that burden or that kind of responsibility that comes with that. So I would say, number one, take risks. In my career, I took a lot of risks with startups. I started up a division. I raised my hand and said, yes, I'm willing to do that. And I would also say networking. That is also a muscle that I am learning to exercise more and more, even though I've been in the industry for a very long time. But figure out maybe what industry you think you might want to be in, begin networking and shadow, learn what is they're currently doing and also what the future may look like in that industry. There's so much change. I can only speak for pharmaceuticals as that's my knowledge base, but there's so many changes that are happening, and to better understand those changes will allow you to make probably a better decision on what your future can look like.
Belief in yourself and also dedication to take that leap of faith to lead those teams and startups. What were some of those internal motivators or factors that led you to make those decisions to step up and take the lead?
That's a great question. I would say first and foremost is grit, the ability to kind of believe in yourself and know what your strengths are, maybe where there's an opportunity to learn, and knowing that you might fail, and that's okay too. But in failing, in interviewing many times with many different companies, one of those that they always ask, questions that they ask is, tell me a time you failed and what did you learn from it? And I do think when someone says, I didn't fail, depending on the role, for instance, if I was going to do a startup and maybe someone said, I didn't fail, I probably might think twice, because failure means that you actually took a risk. And so there's nothing wrong with failing as long as you can learn from it. And I do believe, you know, in getting my MBA, that was one of the kind of core principles, was the fact that these companies, and we can see this with like Tesla or even Uber, that they took these disruptive innovations, and with those disruptive innovations, there is a chance of risk, but with that is also a huge reward in the end. And so that's what I would say is a learning, and I have taken it with every company that I've gone to.
And so you mentioned going to school and getting your MBA. What other kind of classes or outside learning would you recommend to someone who's looking at a similar career path and trajectory as yours?
I would say one of the things that I've already discussed, which is networking. And as far as education, if someone is interested in pharmaceuticals, I would say learn their vernacular. There is every company, I feel like, or every industry has a vernacular, the way they speak or the way they speak about. So when I say channel management, if someone's looking to get into pharmaceuticals and they're brand new, to understand what channel management means. And so really understanding what those underlying kind of discussions are that often come in, let's say, pharmaceutical industry. So I would say get to know people in the industry. It is one of those industries that it does help if you know someone in the industry. And so network through LinkedIn, all the channels that you have, and don't be afraid to. I get emails from people in LinkedIn saying, I'm really interested. Do you have a couple minutes to speak to me? And I do take that opportunity. There's people even within Pfizer that will email me and say, can I have 5-10 minutes to learn more about the role? And so I would just say you have to be an active participant in networking and getting to meet the right people.
what has been the most valuable in your career, your education or your experience throughout your career?
My experience throughout my career. My education afforded me the ability to be where I am because in pharmaceuticals, in the roles that I have, you had to have a bachelor's degree. So it afforded me the opportunity to be in the roles that I am, but the experience absolutely cannot be, you can't learn the experience in a school. The experience that I have and the reason why I was brought in to help build this division at Pfizer is 100% due to my experience. However, the education is what kind of checks the box to make sure that I meet the criteria that they're looking for.
What are some of the criteria that they look for in someone to build and lead a team? Because oftentimes now it seems that leadership is something that's being taught more and more throughout schooling. And I do believe it's a very important trait to get where you need to be in your career. What are some tips you have to be a successful leader?
I often tell my team, and it depends on, I would say, the division you work in. So in my division, teamwork is very important. There are many people that were very successful in, let's say, sales. However, when they come to the division that I'm in, we move together as a team. So as a leader, embracing the team, learning, helping people learn, we talked about, it's okay to failure. You're not a fail. It's okay to fail. You're not a failure just because you fail. And so having that ability to help people get to that point is truly what is an asset for a startup. And then one of the other things that we speak a lot about is challenging the idea and not the person. And so there are many things that come from, it's just the way we do it. And that's why we're going to do it. And challenging that status quo is very important. And you have to have that kind of trust with your team that they feel comfortable in challenging that. And then I would also say value, having your team feel valued. For instance, the teams that I lead, I really rely on them to challenge me. I also rely on them to bring ideas so that I can help bring those ideas up to the higher executive leadership. And so the ability to trust my team, have them trust me that I want what's best for ultimately the patient is critical in leading a team. And so whatever the end is important that they realize that we're in this together.
And so earlier you mentioned how you respond to people asking for help and give time to those that are younger than you and needing some more experience. So who were some of your mentors and how do you connect with them?
That's a great question. And like I said, networking and mentoring, I know are different. And I actually lead a work stream right now for people in my division to help get professional growth through networking. As far as mentors, I would say I've had an opportunity to work with many different managers and leaders, and each one of them has brought an aspect to my career that I couldn't have otherwise. And I was just recently giving this example. I had a manager where everything had to go through him. And at first that was frustrating. And I had someone say to me, you will look back and very, very much value that experience. And I will say in my current role, there are times where I will look through something that someone sent me and I do that because of him. And I'm so grateful that I do that because there are times where maybe I've saved them for sending an email that maybe they did not want to send, or having the ability to have an extra pair of eyes on something that might help somebody else. So really making sure that I would say my mentors were really people that have either instructed me in the past or were team members that I currently still, since I've worked for many companies, still speak with and use them as sounding boards.
Were there any mentors or people that you looked up to that may be unorthodox? What I mean is someone that wasn't a manager or wasn't a boss, someone outside of work that you really looked up to and helped and gave you a lot of very powerful advice?
Outside of the industry, it's interesting. I do have, since I obviously am a female in this industry, I do have somebody that is in tech and she's also a female, and we will kind of give each other ideas that we're thinking. And so I do use her also as a mentor, but most of my mentors are people that are in my industry, only because of the fact that it's easy to have a discussion with them and have them understand the industry.
What are some tips or advice you give for someone who may not have a mentor right now, but is looking to find one and have someone who guide them along the path or just give them advice in general?
I would say to look at somebody that you can see their career growth. And I would also say humility. There's currently a leader at Pfizer, and the humility to be able to stand up and tell a personal story, or even as we talked about, talk about a time that they failed, I think makes somebody trusting, that you can trust them, you can trust their advice. And I would say humility, as well as somebody that you could see their career path that maybe just wasn't handed to them. There's nothing wrong with that, obviously, to kind of have a leg up, but somebody that had to work their way to get to where they were, you would have a better understanding as to what they went through in order to get there.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Do you have anything else to add to wrap up the episode here for our listeners?
No, thank you so much for having me here. I hope it was a valuable experience, and I just appreciate everything you guys are doing to help people learn how to understand business.
Well, great. Thank you for your time, and we'll look forward to sharing this episode with our listeners. And that's it for this episode of Fisher Link. Fisher Link is presented by Fisher Inc., a student-run magazine for the Fisher College of Business. This episode has been hosted by podcast members Andrew Shahada and Barrett Fiore. I'd like to thank Daniel Rose, the president of Fisher Inc., for making this podcast possible. If you enjoyed listening, please leave a review, check out our past episodes, and be sure to follow us on Instagram at Fisher Inc. Mag for updates on future episodes. Fisher Link is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and on go.osu.edu/Fisher Inc., where you can stay informed on all things Fisher. Thanks so much for listening, and go Bucks!